Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, there's a new book out titled The Meaning of Is. This is going to be a fun interview. We'll do this sometime in the next couple weeks. Georgia Congressman Bob Barr, who was involved in the Clinton impeachment, he's written a book, The Meaning of Is. So that should be interesting. Also, with Alan Keyes running for the Senate, U.S. Senate in Illinois, we will have a discussion about that with Phyllis Schlafly sometime in the next couple weeks. We'll do that probably next week. Alan, that is going to be one interesting campaign to watch. That will be fascinating. A black liberal versus a black conservative. And Alan Keyes is a firebrand. He's a tremendous orator, and he's one of the best speaking publicly to defend the unborn child. And Obama, his opponent, Democratic opponent, has voted even in favor of partial birth abortion, which all abortion is murder. And partial birth abortion, or as Alan Keyes calls it, live birth abortion, should be the most obvious to even the most wicked that they are murdering an innocent child, a living child being delivered out of the birth canal, 6, 7, 8 month old child, and he's then slaughtered with a hole put in the back of his neck and literally his brain sucked out of his body. I mean, these liberals, they're just brutal murderers. They are murderers. And the Republicans who tolerate it and even appoint judges who are pro-abortion. It's really tragic. At any rate, we'll talk with Phyllis Schlafly about Alan Keyes' campaign. And today we're going to discuss this Pakistani who's been in America illegally for some years, and he was just arrested by the FBI, and they caught him in Charlotte, North Carolina. He was videotaping buildings downtown and buildings there and elsewhere, dams, transportation systems. So we've got the affidavit that the police officers filled out on the guy off the internet from thesmokinggun.com. So we'll do that today. And your calls at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. By the way, I've been a Christian for over 30 years. I now pastor Denver Bible Church for 5 years, and I've been a talk show host for 12 years. And I've been all over this country, and I've seen schools through all that time. And let me tell you about the very best school I have ever seen, Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. You know, there are people, I know I used to be one, that will drive from across the Denver metropolitan area to bring their kids to Maranatha. They have over 100 on staff, Christ-centered, top academics, affordable, all for your kids from 2.5 years to 12th grade. Call Maranatha Christian Center at 303-431-5653. That's Maranatha, 431-5653. Okay, now to this case in North Carolina. Have you heard about this guy, this Pakistani who's been living in New York? And he's now been arrested in Charlotte, North Carolina. Let me read you from the affidavit. All right, let's see here. The information in this affidavit is based on, from the Charlotte Police Department and the records of the United States Department of Homeland Security on July 20th. Now, just imagine that you're a police officer and you're on the beat and you see this. This guy looks like he's from the Middle East, Pakistan, and he's got a video camera in his hand, and he's videotaping the downtown area of Charlotte. So I'm going to go through his story, but first we're going to take a call or two. But I want to know, what would you do if you're a police officer and you see a guy from obviously a Middle Eastern descent, and he's just videotaping buildings downtown? What do? You do anything? Are you afraid that you'll be accused of profiling, racial profiling? At any rate, we'll get to that in a few moments. But first, let's go to the phones. First call from Arkansas, Paragould, Arkansas, Pastor Aaron. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live, Pastor.
Hi, it's good to be on.
Thank you, sir.
I'm actually the youth pastor here at the church.
All right.
And I heard your comments, I think it was a couple weeks ago, about youth ministries.
Yeah, we had a young man who just moved to Denver call into the show asking if at Denver Bible Church if we had a good youth group.
Yeah, I was glad to hear somebody actually questioning the idea of youth ministry.
Wow, and you're a youth pastor.
I am a youth pastor. And
okay.
Yeah, well, I know. That's strange.
Well, this is fascinating. Pastor Aaron, let me tell you, after that show, we had this was an example of what we've experienced for in the past 12 years on the air. We had a woman call in who was so angry that we criticized youth groups in any way. And she in fact, said that I was rude to the young man who called in. And I thought we had a very amicable conversation. And he agreed that youth groups can be rather dangerous.
Yeah, it's a sacred cow.
Tell us about your perspective.
Well, from my perspective, now, I don't have a problem with the church saying, well, we're going to do something to reach teenagers or any age group for that matter, or any group of people.
Right.
I think we need to do whatever we can to reach people. But from my perspective, youth ministries, they've been going for a while, really since the 60s.
Yeah, it's not like Christianity has had youth groups for 2,000 years.
No, they're really more of a response to when the baby boomers became teenagers.
Yeah, baby boomers became teenagers.
Right, all the churches.
After World War II, and moms and dads were busy. Many of them had two jobs, and the churches began to take on sort of babysitting roles.
Right, exactly. And too many churches don't really think about what they're doing with youth ministry anymore. It's just assumed that if you have a Wednesday night youth group, then you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And without that thought going into it, without anybody saying, okay, what are we doing? What are we teaching? Who are we allowing to teach? What kind of safeguards are we putting into this? Without any of that going into it, we have just youth ministry run amok.
Well, what we point out is that there are downsides, there are trade-offs to youth groups.
Yes.
And that the church has not even acknowledged that downsides exist.
Right.
There is no conversation. There's no awareness. So even the best churches don't really do much to safeguard their kids against the downsides.
Right. And that's why I was so glad to hear you questioning it.
And
because
so what
you
are
never hear it questioned.
So if we could review just briefly the downsides of youth groups is that I had lunch with a guy who's been going to a good church in Denver for the last 10 years yesterday, and he had heard just in the past few weeks these programs we got together, and he wanted to talk about youth groups. We talked about youth groups, and he said, you know, I've never heard anyone else question youth groups, but then he began to give me his own personal horror stories of the sexual immorality that kids got involved in first at their church youth group.
Yeah.
And young girls, teenage girls from a Christian church, and they're sort of, not that this is intentional, but they're like the lure for the public school teenage boys to come to the church on a Wednesday night, and really what they're interested in is dating or having sex with the girls.
Right. Well, you say not intentional, and I don't know that there's people out there that want that to happen, but
right.
It is often not intentional, but celebrated when the young Christian girl in the youth group is drawing in the boys.
Right, exactly.
I've heard youth ministers before say, well, we're so glad we have her because she really gets them in. Or, you know, and then you hear things like, well, I know he's not good, but at least he's coming.
Right, exactly. And what happens time after time after time is that the negative influence pulls down the Christian kids.
Yes.
And we've seen it. There are churches that, you know, we know of here in the Denver area that their youth groups, you know, they end up with drugs at youth group functions.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as the function's over, the marijuana comes out. Kids are having they're having sex. Kids are getting pregnant. And this stuff happens under the church umbrella. And so then there are things like the youth pastors will have sleepovers, all-nighters.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have them at the church or at the youth pastor's house. And it's my experience that the better parents say, I don't want my kid to do that. And then the child uses the church as a wedge between the child and his own parents.
Right. And very far too often, the youth pastor becomes a wedge between the child and the parent.
Right. So instead of reinforcing the parent, the authority and the wisdom of the parent over the child, the youth pastor takes the child's side against the parents.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're aware of this. We're aware of this. We need to start a dialogue so churches will talk it through.
Yes, they need to. I constantly, because I have a lot of volunteers that come back there, they get tired of me sometimes, I think, just question everything.
Right.
Why are we doing this? And then I hear things, for example, the whole volunteer issue is often a problem because people think youth ministry is a great starting point.
Yeah, it's used as a stepping stone toward a real job.
Right. Well, I've had people, even in the volunteer, I had somebody who is dealing with college-aged girls, and this woman has been trying to teach these girls, and she's got these girls are in some bad situations. They're living with boyfriends, and one of them was pregnant out of wedlock, and she's trying to teach them. She's trying to reach them, and God bless her for that. But she came to me and said, you know, I think it would be so good if these girls could volunteer in the youth ministry.
Right.
And I thought, well, you've got to be kidding me. Mm. You know, that's not the appropriate place. We
right.
need mature people,
right.
not you know, if you want something to do, come hang out and be a kid.
Now, Pastor Aaron, and we're thrilled that you're calling in from Arkansas. This program airs on the radio in Colorado, and we get into our neighboring states. But people listen around the country via the web.
That's where I listen.
But, well, and that's, we're thrilled about that. But at Denver Bible Church, we're not a large church. We were planted by a Bible church across town 5 years ago with 30 people, and we now have about 70 or 80 people on a regular basis. And so we're growing slowly. But so it's easy for us to say, well, we don't go in for youth groups because, well, we have a small church. But here's our philosophy. If there's a desire or a need for the youth to do some event, like our kids will go on Christian activist events
mm-hmm.
and go out and witness, go to a local abortion mill. But we have parents involved, so the parents are there with the kids so that the church consciously is not a babysitting service. It's not that. And we don't really encourage our kids to be get romantically involved and be dating, unless they're of age where they can marry.
Right. I agree with you.
If they can't get married, then you don't want the kids in the church having romantic relationships.
Right.
It's just not helpful.
Right. I agree with you.
Wow.
In a situation like you're in where you can start from scratch, just doing family, you know, when you're dealing with through the families is the best way to go.
And one thing I got to say about Denver Bible Church, the thing that we're so thrilled about is the families. The men, you know, some churches have more women than men.
Yeah.
And maybe young girls than young teenage 20-something guys. We have the opposite. We have more guys and single guys than women. And I think it's partly because we try to put the masculinity back into the gospel. And not be so timid and afraid to say things like, we're not going to have girls used as bait or lure to attract unbelieving teenage boys with raging hormones. We're not going to do that to the young girls at Denver Bible Church.
Well, you're definitely going about it the right way.
Well, God bless you. Hey, Pastor, we hope that you might call in again sometime. We appreciate your perspective and a little affirmation there.
Yeah, any time. I'd love to, like I said, I was so excited when I heard that somebody was actually publicly questioning the idea of youth groups.
Well, there's two of us in the country now, Pastor. Let's stick together.
I'll admit, you know, I have a youth group. That's my ministry.
Yeah.
But But I don't think there's anything wrong per se with a youth group, but you can't just, they're not inherently good. The Bible didn't say thou shalt have youth group.
Right.
Have one, you're okay.
Yeah, and we don't say it's a sin. You know,
right.
We're not legalistic at Denver Bible Church, but we say it's fraught with dangers.
Yeah, you have to question everything.
Right, and if you don't have tremendous wisdom in charge of your youth group, it's probably more hurtful than it is helpful.
Sure. Well, it's you know, a lot of times even what is considered success in a youth group is not
right.
helpful. I mean, I often point out to people, you know, like we said earlier, the youth groups are a product of churches responding to the baby boomers.
Right.
When they were teenagers, the churches responded with the intention that if we make a church for them, they'll stay in the church. Well, by and large, the baby boomers did not stay in the church.
Mm.
They left and drove.
Good point.
That model failed.
Right.
Because success was determined more by a youth group culture. Well, if the kid, and we still see it today. Well, if the kid goes to the Third Day concert and wears the WWJD bracelet and the right T-shirts, well, then he must be a good kid. He must be on track, and he'll be fine. And what happens? He graduates, and you never see him again.
Right. My brother called into the show about a year ago. He goes to the best church they could find in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so in their town, Greenville, South Carolina. So his son is now old enough to go to the youth group. So first meeting of the new school year, my brother thinks, well, I'll go see what it's like. He called up the show the next week. He said it was a nightmare. None of his kids will ever go to any of the youth functions at the church. It was dark. It was blaring loud music. The kids were paired up, boyfriend, girlfriend. There were kids in other rooms in the church alone that my brother thought they were obviously making out. Some kids went out behind the church in the dark, and he thought it seemed like they're, you know, maybe doing drugs or marijuana. It was just a complete nightmare.
Did he question the people in charge about it?
Yeah.
Did they tell him at least they're here?
Basically. They were completely unreceptive to his concerns.
Yeah.
And that's the best church he's been looking, the best church they can find.
I'll be honest, I went to a youth ministry conference not long ago, it was a couple of years ago, and they had these breakout times where all the youth ministers were supposed to get together and discuss a particular topic, and the discussion was, what's the biggest hindrance to your ministry? And almost everybody at the table that I was at said parents. Mm. And now At first, I thought the conversation was, you know, ungodly parents who are in the way, and
but
there's
that's not
a
what
lot
they
of
meant.
Those.
Right.
But
it's the more involved parents are
right.
the ones that the youth pastors get annoyed with.
Right. That's what they're talking about.
Because they want free reign.
Questions.
Right. As though they're raising these children. Real quick, Pastor, because we're going to go in a moment. But a Christian guy that I know and have been friends with for a long time in Colorado. And I love him and respect him. He's a neat guy. But he's about maybe 40 years old and divorced. And he ended up heading up a church youth group. And I said to the families at the church, I said, give it a year or two and he's going to marry one of the girls in the youth group.
Oh, no.
And it ended up, now when they got married, I think she had just turned 20. But when they started, she was in the youth group.
Right.
And it's not a sin for a 40-year-old to marry a 20-year-old or a 19-year-old.
No.
It's not a sin, but it's a bit awkward. And it makes it look like it's almost a predator situation where the youth leader is eyeing the girls in the group.
Yeah, and that.
It doesn't require a lot of wisdom to say this is generally not a good idea.
Exactly.
And I'm saying I love and respect this guy. It's just that our whole Christian mindset is so far afield of where it should be. I think we're out of touch with biblical sexual wisdom and morality.
Right. Well, we don't, like I said, we don't define what's going to be success. We say we're going to reach those teenagers, and we don't define what success is. We don't say when they're Bible believing and, you know, letting that change their life and guide their life. That's success. And
Pastor,
we just put them in the group.
Thank you so very much. God bless you, Pastor. Appreciate that. What a neat guy. Now let's go to Larned, Kansas. Kirk, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, I was calling from Larned. I have a car out of Springs, but I'm out here building a prison, a mental hospital.
All right. And are you able, do you listen over the air out there?
No, I can't. Well, some days you can pick it up, but yeah. You have to turn it up really loud and it comes in staticky.
All right. Well, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Yeah. It was a while back, and this house has 5 bedrooms, and it's 2 guys to each bedroom.
What house? What house?
Oh, the one our contractor I work for bought a couple houses out here because the job's so big.
Okay.
So I got, 9 other guys in the house with me at some times.
All right.
So me and one other guy are roommates, me and my friend, I've known him 9 years, and we just keep to ourselves, and the other guys started having people over, girls.
Oh.
And I didn't know how young they were, because I'm 28, but I look like I'm 19.
Right, right, okay.
I mean, I can't buy a lotto ticket without getting carded.
Okay.
So, but I was kind of suspicious, but a couple of them looked older, and I found out a couple of them were 20, 21. But so they come down and they're like, yeah, do you want to come to the strip party? I was like, what strip party? And they're like, oh, we're having one at the house. I'm like, no, I'm not into that, And, they walked away and they thought, they were just saying I was gay and stuff,
Right.
But that night I went to the foreman's meeting we had and I come back and I seen the girls and I said, man, they look kind of young. So I said something to them and then they said, well, one's 16 and then one's 20 and then one's 18 or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what are they doing here? They're a little young. And, so they said, well, you just mind your own business, So then a couple other ones started showing up, and then I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm like, well, either I'm going to have to go talk to my boss or I'm just going to have to go report it to the cops, because they're coming over here drinking.
Right.
So I wasn't sure what to do, and I'm kind of, well, there's 9 of them, or there's 8 of them, and just me and this other guy, And I was like, well, and then I just remembered you always said do right, face the consequences.
Mm.
So what I did was the next day, 2 other girls came over, and I knew who they were because they went to this church. So I went right over there on Saturday and I talked to the pastor. And
Good for you.
I was telling the pastor who was there, and there was a bunch of elders in the church. And one of the guys was saying, oh, man, that's my granddaughter.
Right.
And he was like, I'm so glad that you came forward and,
Wow, that's great, Kirk.
And he said, we'll take care of it. And I said, okay. So then those 2 girls never came back, but the other girl kept coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally just went to my boss, which is my uncle, and I said, either you're going to take care of this or I'm going to quit. I'll go back to the Springs and work,
Wow.
I don't want to be here anyways, and I'm one of the foremen, so if he loses me,
prison for the mentally retarded is going to be delayed.
So he took care of it. And then all of a sudden, now I'm getting, ridicule on the job site and everywhere else, because...
Well, and that's where our culture is at. Our culture is at, if you stand up for what's right, you're a freak. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Why would you suspect? We got people, because I don't know if I get the stories because I'm on the air and the stories come out of the woodwork, but we got people telling us, they're in the same room, this Christian couple, they're not married, they're traveling, they're staying at, they're in the same room, but they're not doing anything. And they're staying there. That I hear that all the time, all over the country. What's with that? How could that be? And then we're told that there's something wrong with us because we have an evil mind.
Yeah.
And I think, it's too much.
Well, and then on the job site, because they were 16 and 15, 16, 17, and then there was a couple of them they're older, but there was 3 of them or 4 of them at one time that stopped by that were underage. And it wasn't because I didn't want them there because they're underage. It was because I was gay.
Right.
And as soon as I say, well, that's not what I believe, and then they say, oh, no, we're going to have a Bible study, and I'm like,
right. All right. Well, Kirk.
I'm like, well, at least they know where I stand.
Well, Kirk, yeah, you're right. And thank you for standing up, doing what's right. And you know what? You have helped those girls more than anybody else around there. They don't know it, but they have you to thank for a chance at not having their lives ruined.
Well, and then I got in an argument with the supposedly Christian out here.
All right. Go ahead. We're almost done.
Okay. He was saying that I handled it wrong. And I said, you're right, because I should have went to the cops, because when you see a crime committed,
all right,
you go to the cops, because if someone
good
robbed a bank and you find out, you don't go to the guy's house and say, oh, please bring back the money. You say, no, you go to the cops and you report it. And I said, you're right, I did it wrong. I shouldn't have went.
Good for you, Kirk. God bless you. I appreciate that. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. All right, so you're in Charlotte. You're in Charlotte. You're with the police department, and you see a guy from Middle Eastern descent, a darker guy, and he's videotaping buildings. What do you do? Well, this police officer approached him and asked him, and when the police officer was approaching this guy named Sheikh, his name is Sheikh, it's Cameron Sheikh. Cameron Sheikh stopped videotaping and began walking away. So the officer approached him, Tony Maglione, approached him and asked Sheikh, what are you doing? And he said, I'm walking to the bus station. And Tony Maglione, a good paisano, he looks over his shoulder and he thinks, well, the bus station is in the opposite direction. So you're not walking to the bus station, so let's just talk for a moment. And he made a call, and another detective came along who was a member of the Joint Terrorist Task Force. And they talked to the guy and asked him if he'd go voluntarily to the Charlotte FBI office. And he agreed to walk a few blocks. And they began to talk to him, and he lied through his teeth about having a green card. He didn't have a green card. Turns out he entered the country illegally through Tijuana, Mexico. And he said, oh, yeah, I did come in. Finally, they're finding out information from him about him over the internet, well, on the computer, the Homeland Security database. And he said, well, I went back to Pakistan in 1996 after I was here for about 5 years. And then they let me back in the country because I had an employment authorization card. And the detective said, well, an alien could not enter the United States with an employment authorization card. So the guy's lying. He said he had a green card. Turns out that was a lie. So they asked if they could look at one of his videotapes, and he said yes, and they pop it in a video machine, and he is basically casing buildings in downtown Charlotte, North Carolina, including the Bank of America building, the Wachovia building. So they start going through all these videos that he allowed them to look at, and he's got video of buildings, financial buildings, transportation buildings in Atlanta, Georgia, and Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas, Dallas, Texas, and New Orleans, Louisiana. And he had video of a dam, the Mansfield Dam in Austin, Texas, and video of public transportation, in Atlanta. And so anyway, it's pretty neat, huh, that these guys just, they weren't afraid of being accused of racial profiling. They saw a dark-skinned guy, Middle Eastern-type guy. Not that all Middle Eastern people are bad. Of course not. Now, all Italians, that's another matter. Oh, wait a minute. I'm Italian. But they had the courage to approach him, and he was a little nervous. He lied, and they got him. And now he's under arrest. And at the least, he'll be deported. Hopefully, we'll find out who his contacts are, and the war on terror goes on. Okay, hey, looking forward to tomorrow's show. Come on out to Denver Bible Church this Sunday. And hey, if you can't make it to church, check out our website at kgov.com. If you enjoy Bob and Yurt Live, you can help us with a monthly pledge or a subscription to our Bible studies. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.